Hi, it's Tom Ashbrook. Thanks for listening to On Point. If you love this show, you may also love other great podcasts, shows, and journalism brought to you by NPR. When you support your local public radio station, it helps us keep our show going and helps NPR create new ones. The best way to keep On Point and NPR strong is to donate to your station. Visit donate.npr.org/onpoint to give. Then share why you did using the hashtag WhyPublicRadio. And thanks. From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. We are constantly bombarded with sound, from cars and screens and pings and push notifications. My guest today, Norwegian explorer and publisher Erling Kagge, says enough. He's speaking up for silence, and more than that, for the absence of distraction. He's found it from Manhattan to the middle of the Antarctic. This hour on Point, the quest for silence in our high-volume world. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Do you remember silence? What it means? What it's good for? And where do you find it now? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Joining me now from New York is Erling Kagge, Norwegian explorer, publisher, author, entrepreneur, out with a new book of his own called Silence in the Age of Noise. You can read an excerpt at our website, onpointradio.org. Erling Kagge, welcome to On Point. Great to have you here.
Thank you, Tom.
You had an early experience that seems to have informed your relationship with silence. You were quite the explorer as a young guy. First, I think, if I read this correctly, first to go to all three, the North Pole, the South Pole, and the top of Everest. But that you walked alone to the South Pole, 800 miles, 50 days. What did you learn about silence?
I walked for 50 days and nights under the midnight sun in this absolutely quiet place. The only noises were the noises I made myself. And walking into this great, vast nothingness, I can't, you know, the more quiet it became, the more I heard, and I became more and more aware of how silence can enrich you and how much noise it is all over the world outside Antarctica. And soon after that expedition, I became a father. I got three teenage girls now, and life has been about noise ever since.
I wonder, on that walk, was it snowshoes, walking, skiing? What was it, Erling, to the South Pole?
I walked on skis, dragging all my gear on a sled. So I had food for 66 days and fuel for about 70 days. And the last thing I did before I started on the expedition was to open my radio, take out the batteries, and leave the batteries in the airplane, because airplane company had forced me to bring a radio, but my goal was to be totally alone in silence.
They had sponsored your trip, and they wanted a way to stay in touch with you on that long walk or ski to the South Pole. You said no thanks and pulled out the batteries. That was a long time ago now, the early 90s. Do you remember what you thought about silence then versus now? We have the sense that we have ever more intrusions into that kind of stillness we like to imagine is inside us. Do you feel it's gotten worse? You call your book, in your title, you were talking about the age of noise. Is that where we live now, Erling?
Yeah, I think so, because I think, you know, the 90s when I did these expeditions, you still had lots of noise, but it was, you know, this was prior to the smartphones, prior to internet. I think, you know, just the last, let's say, 5 years, not to mention the last 10 years since we got the iPhones or the smartphones, the world has changed dramatically. So that's why I call this book The Age of Noise, because we definitely live in the age of noise, that in the sense that we're living through our devices, we're living through other people, running away from ourselves. So today it's very different from only a few years ago, yes.
That silence, I wonder how you think about exactly the value of it or the experience of it. At the other end of the planet, I used to worked a lot on the tundra in the north of Alaska, and it was extremely quiet. I remember watching the jets that would fly over from L.A. to London. They'd be all the way up at their height, you know, whatever, 35, 38, 40,000 feet above. You could hear no sound from where I was. In a way, I loved the majesty of the silence, but then, you know, I watched that plane and I used to think about, oh, there's music up in that airplane and there's the tinkling of, I don't know, champagne glasses in first class and very pleasant things too.
Yeah, you know, I had the same experience walking to the North Pole that I saw sometimes this plane passing and I was thinking about people sitting up there drinking gin tonics and enjoying life.
Exactly.
But somehow I didn't miss it because, you know, variety is good and sometimes silence is good. And, you know, the silence you experienced out there in Alaska is, of course, great silence. But I think, you know, living in a city like most people do, also in the States, somehow you have to create your own silence. You can't wait for the silence to come to you. And one way to do it is just, you know, you could always find a quiet place in any city. If you walk in one direction for 20 minutes, you usually come to a peaceful area. But also, I think it's important sometimes to just stop, maybe turn off your electronics, not being connected all the time, and turn around and explore yourself, because silence is about meeting yourself, while noise, all these distractions, expectations, sounds, etc., it's about living through others.
I mean, you're not a monk or a mystic. You run a very busy publishing house in Oslo, in Norway. So how do you pursue your goal?
That's right. I can understand why people move into a monastery, but it's definitely not for me. I enjoy family life and enjoy my job. But sometimes it's just getting too much. And then I try to, you know, appreciate little silence I can get. And I get it when I wake up in the morning, when I make breakfast, if I walk to the office or walk to a metro station, I find some silence. Or shutting out the world, and I can find silence if I listen to music in the silence. I can find silence when I do the dishes after cooking. And I find silence, you know, in Norway, it's a big movement, people chopping wood, that's about silence, and people and ladies or people are knitting, that's about silence. So I think, you know, when people say, I'm too busy to find silence, it's too complicated, I don't believe it. It's not that difficult, but it's, you know, something that you actually want to do. And silence will always be more difficult to explore than noise, because noise is always the easiest option. It's always easiest to Google something, you find what you're looking for, and 20 minutes later, you're still Googling. That's the easiest option.
I see, Erling, that with you, we have to really seriously expand our definition of silence, because you're extending silence to chopping wood, which can be pretty loud. I mean, I know there's a lot of silence between the axe falling or doing the dishes, which is could be meditative, but not silent. Knitting, which has got a little nice tick, 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 click to it. Even music, that's hardly silent.
You know,
what's your definition?
My definition is that, you know, of course, you can always search for a totally silent place. Many people have done, but I don't believe you'll find a fully silent, quiet place. Because when you eventually get there, you're making some noises yourself. Mm-hmm. So you have to start to look for the silence within, shutting out the world, and that's what's happening when you're doing the dishes. And the good thing doing the dishes, nobody is going to disturb you.
So it's really silence. I guess you mean an absence of distraction or what you call noise. Noise is sort of the enemy of that. Is it just mindfulness you're talking about in a way?
In one way, it's mindfulness or meditation, but, you know, those require a technique. But this is something I think you can find every day and at any time. And this inner silence, it's not complicated. And as I said, with noise, of course, it's all these distractions, expectations, but you also find all this visual noise. Like I'm walking here to the studio today, you have all the cars, you have all, you know, lights, etc. And that's also kind of noise, which is, you know, it's nothing wrong with it, but it's kind of disturbing throughout the day.
Do you find that the age of noise is equally distributed between nations You travel plenty, certainly between the United States and Norway. Do you find a more or less steady state, equal volume of noise in different cultures, or is it different?
It's definitely more noise in New York than most other places. So yeah, I think it's different. But I think, you know, in the Western world today, it's noise absolutely all over. That's for sure.
And there you're including the latest ping, even if it's set on silent on your phone, you're including all the intrusions that come from, I don't know, tweets or posts or push notices.
Yeah, all this is noise.
Have you really managed to decrease it in your life? Have you found a way to cut it by, I don't know, 30%, half, 90%?
Yeah, absolutely, because as I said, I live a busy life and, you know, sometimes I can check the news 3 times or 4 times in 1 hour on my phone, mm-hmm. although I know nothing has happened. But, you know, then somehow I had to get my act together. So it's, so absolutely, yes. When I sat down to write this book, I spent a year and a half. I became more and more aware of, you know, that I was living my life through other people. So yes, it changed a little bit, but you know, I don't think it should change our lives dramatically. We should just be slightly more aware of silence and how it can enrich you.
Silence, in a broad definition here. I have a feeling, though, that literal silence may be good practice for the deeper silence that you're writing about. Erling Kagge is my guest. Norwegian explorer, publisher, author. Depeche Mode, enjoy the silence. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Vows are spoken to be broken. Feelings are intense. Words are trivial. Pleasures remain. So does the pain. Words are meaningless and forgettable. All I ever wanted, all I ever needed is here. My arms. Words are very unnecessary. They can only do harm.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about silence. How much of it we need, how much of it we get in our busy time. Literal silence, and also a kind of quiet within. My guest is Erling Kagge, Norwegian explorer, publisher, author. His latest book is Silence. In the Age of Noise, you can read an excerpt at our website, onpointradio.org, and you can join us today. Erling is in New York. Maybe you're sitting somewhere very quiet. Tell us about it. When did you most know silence in your life? And was it welcome? Was it not? Are we allergic to silence now, afraid of it almost? And what do we lose without it? Erling, people are tapping on computers somewhere out there or cell phones and sending us messages for you. Stephen writes to us. He says, very lucky to have a few rural acres. Out with the dogs early. It's really pretty quiet. Close your eyes, face the autumn sun, breathe. Sounds like he's finding some peace there. Daniel writes, I live in northwest Wisconsin and live for my hikes, sits, fishing in our national forests. During the week, I run a frantic dental laboratory business. Once that weekend in the country, Carolyn, quiet walks along the river, listening to birds, a rabbit, a squirrel rusting in the leaves, the sound of moving water. It's music that feeds the soul. But there's kind of a debate here as well, Erling. Here, one of our listeners writes, Humanity says, all noise, including white noise, reduces your capacity for understanding and innovation. Quiet, reflective moments lower stress and permit creativity. But then there's another on Facebook from Matthew. He says, for me, I've been a fan of silence, but not total silence. He likes the silence of cell phone chatter, traffic, electronics. It helps him relax and get positive, he says. What about that kind of the drone of that noise that may actually relax some people early?
Yeah, I can recognize that, what Matthew is writing, in the sense that, it's hardly any sounds at all. That could be a bit frightening, and that's not something new. That's something that bothered people throughout the ages. Mm. So that's why sometimes some background sounds, like Matthew's mentioning, can also cool you down. But thing is, if you relate too much to it, and expect something to happen that's relevant for you, that you wait for messages, that you wait for some confirmation, that you think about things you have to do, that's about noise. So I mean, something that could be silence one day could also appear to be noise the other day.
Kind of droning may be okay sometimes. Connor in Nashville, Tennessee. Connor, you're on the air with Erling Kagge.
Hi, Tom. Hey, Erling.
Hi.
So I'm a Buddhist and a musician and someone who struggles with a lot of mental health issues in terms of anxiety and focus. So I was wondering what spending 50 days in complete silence, I'm sure you understand like concepts of meditation and that kind of stuff as well, but how did that affect you in terms of your mental health? Like, where did you find change when you came back? And how did this affect your creativity, and how did this affect like thought while you were there?
I think one of the most important things I learned is that, you know, silence is not about living a more egocentric life. It's more about opening up to the world. It's more about becoming more aware. And it's more about loving life even more. And I also think, as I said, in terms of creativity, I think, you know, to walk in silence or in peace is some of the best things you can actually do for creativity. And actually, it has been done some research on this on the University of Stanford in California, and confirmed what, you know, people have known through generations, that if you walk, you become more creative and while you walk. And also, if you don't speak while you walk, you know, it helps even more.
Jim, in Asheville, North Carolina. Jim, you're on with Erling in New York.
Hi, Tom, Erling. Thanks for taking my call here. Mm-hmm. First of all, Tom, you're the best in the biz. Shout out. And also, real quick, your music supervisor, you guys have great music, speaking of
all right.
Silence.
Good.
I'm actually a musician and an electronic engineer, recording engineer. So we have this concept in recording called signal-to-noise ratio, where you want to have the best signal to the best to the noise being not prevalent, not raising. And sort of as a corollary here, a lot of music, the meaning is made with the space between the notes. So when you have that silence, you have the ability to make meaning of the noise, or make meaning of the sound that you're incorporating, or the sound that you're reflecting. So I think that those elements, when you kind of look at the concept of silence as the spaces between, and the ability to process, and the ability to take that input and make genuine meaning out of it,
mm-hmm.
when you are bombarded with the cacophony that we have, you don't have time. You don't have the bandwidth to process these things in a meaningful way. That's what I find. It's just constant influx of information. And on the outside, you just lose the core meaning of a lot of this stuff. So if you're able to take a pause and reflect on these things, to me, that's the silence. To me, that's the ability to take this stuff, turn it into meaning, turn it into something that's meaningful to you, and then bring that back out into the world.
And you're thinking as a musician, Jim, in part, about the silence between the notes, the sort of the punctuation of life or music with silence.
Absolutely. If you're listening to a piece of music and it's simply just note after note after note, a million miles per second,
mm-hmm.
you don't have a chance to take a breath. You're not able to, a lot of times, follow a particular thread in that music or get the actual emotion out of it, or the ability to take that in and really enjoy what it is, because you're simply bombarded and you're overwhelmed. Your senses are overwhelmed. You don't have the ability to actually take it in and process it in a meaningful way. And so if you're able to step back from that for a second, to me, in my own life, that is where the meaning itself is made. That's where you're able to communicate. That's where you're able to take something and really turn it into something that matters.
You know, you've put your musician's ear on exactly a point that Erling Kagge makes in his book, Silencing in the Age of Noise, and he takes it straight to, in particular, to Beethoven and this pretty famous opening riff. Beethoven, who knew a little something, and you can hear it right there in those silences between the majesty. Erling, what about the silence in music, or the silence that punctuates life more broadly?
I think Jim's points are very important, and we hear it in Beethoven, lots of classical music, how this silence between the notes kind of wakes you up as as a listener. But you can also hear it in popular music, I think, if you listen this famous hit by Rihanna called Diamonds, but also many other songs. It's when actually the music stops maybe for, you know, a brief second, then you have the drop, and then it goes on again, and the sound level goes a bit up and down, a bit quiet, and then mm-hmm. on again. So I talked to the producers to this song, the Diamonds, and they said, you know, they started with silence, and then they had a few ideas, and they added a few ideas, and then they managed to stop before it became too much sound or too much noise in the song. And that became the hit with Rihanna. So it's silence is important, but of course in popular music today it's a bit harder to hear the silence.
If you're silence phobic or afraid, you might find it even in a pop hit. Here's Diamonds from Rihanna that Erling's talking about.
Shine bright like a diamond. Shine bright like a diamond.
It doesn't have to be a vacuum of silence, but even there, woven into the music, those still points that come before the power of the notes.
Yeah, the silence today in the music, it's slightly louder than it was in the old days, that's for sure. But still, you know, you have those kind of silence in, you know, before the drop, before you actually hear the drums, mm-hmm. and then also later in the song.
You spoke with a lot of interesting people for this book. Did you seek out people who you thought somehow exhibited an understanding of the value of science? When you're sitting and talking with someone, do you have a feeling for whether they have this freedom from distraction within them somewhere?
Yeah, but you know, it's actually I found it most interesting to talk to my own kids because they definitely live, you know, with noise absolutely all the time. Mm. And my youngest daughter, who's now 15, when I talk to her about silence, she thinks it's a total waste. While the two older ones, you know, they start to appreciate it. But then I talked to like an artist like Marina Abramović, who was sitting in silence at MoMA here in New York for 750 hours, looking into the audience's eyes. And, you know, all her art is about silence. Mm-hmm. And also talked to a guy like Elon Musk, the guy who runs SpaceX and Tesla. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you're going to be as creative as he has been so far, you have to, you know, sit or walk in silence to come up with all these ideas. And at the same time, you have to, of course, mingle with people, being connected, discussing ideas. But, you know, but it is when you actually stop and listen to yourself, the really bright new ideas appear.
Marina Abramović, of course, spent 700 plus hours sitting in the Museum of Modern Art in New York, just staring into the eyes of visitors without saying a word. Here's a little bit of her describing the power of that interaction.
At the moment when you really get into yourself, that moment bursts with emotions, with so much feelings. And this is why so many people start crying. They become such important experience in their life. We are not doing this in our own home because we are doing everything to actually cut that relation to ourselves.
To cut that relation to ourselves, Erling Kaga finds it in silence, even if that simply means a removal of distraction. Dennis in Charlotte, North Carolina. Dennis, you're on with Erling. Thanks for calling.
Thank you, Tom. Mm-hmm. My question is this. I've read a lot about the ill effects of solitary confinement as used in some of our nation's prisons.
Yes.
And I wondered what your guest has to say about the negative effects of too much isolation and silence.
I think that's a good question. And I think then silence can be absolutely awful, frustrating, and devastating. But that's not the silence I want to explore in my undertaking. I want to see how silence can enrich you. But obviously, under other circumstances, silence can be about sadness, boredom, loneliness, and desperation.
Do you think? I mean, in solitary confinement, people don't have a choice, and they're put there, and it is famously very punishing for some people. Absolutely drives them mad. On the other hand, do you think that we, as a society, have lost some capacity for sitting with ourselves in what you describe as silence?
Yeah, absolutely. It's because, you know, we're absolutely overtaken by all this information going on all the time, and it's like my daughters, they have never been really bored because it's always something happening in their lives. There's always some options. It's kind of poverty in their lives in the sense that it's just too much going on. While when I was bored in the 60s or in the 70s, I was bored because nothing was happening. But today you kind of get bored because too many things are happening.
What's the effect of that, do you think, over time? If we are less anchored in some kind of space of silence within ourselves, less contemplative, more entertained, more distracted, what's it mean for human culture?
I think I've been thinking a lot about that, Tom, and I think, you know, it seems like life appears to be very, very short if you live under the circumstances you're talking about. So today I'm old enough to go to these 60th and 70th and 80th birthdays, mm-hmm. and at least one speech or several speeches are about life being short, that I didn't really understand that all these days and years mm-hmm. were life itself. Mm-hmm. And that's a bit sad. And I think the reason is because people have been avoiding silence.
And therefore, what if you fill all those moments with the rat-a-tat-tat of distraction? It goes by even more quickly, or we somehow feel the substance of it less.
It feels like it moves more quickly because you have so little variation in your life. You're doing the same kind of stuff day after day, mm-hmm. and hardly ever stop and think about what you're actually doing and think about your life in a slightly different perspective. So I think that's why it feels like life just moves on in a very high pace.
You're Norwegian. Are Norwegians more tuned into this than Americans or that, I don't know, French or Italians? Do you, I guess I come back to the question of national difference here and whether you see one.
It's hard to say with 300 million Americans, but I think in general, yes, Norway is a place which is pretty silent in the sense that it's a huge country with only 5 million people. But I think, you know, it's quite similar because what we're talking about now, it's not a trend. It's not something that, you know, mm-hmm. we're talking about this year and not in 3 years' time. I think this is a deeply human need that has always been there, all, you know, for all humans. But today it has become a bit more desperate because it's so much more noise going on and so many temptations. So I think that's the biggest difference.
The stakes here are, well, they're deep. And we are plumbing them with Erling Kagge. His new book is Silence in the Age of Noise. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
And the people bowed and prayed. God they made, and the sign flashed out its warning in the words that it was forming, and the sign said the words of the prophets are written on the subway walls, the tenement halls, whispering sounds of silence.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about silence. How much of it we need, how much of it we get in our busy time and lives, literal silence, and also a kind of quiet within. My guest is Erling Kagge. He's a Norwegian explorer, publisher. author. His latest book is Silence in the Age of Noise. You can join us. Do you remember silence? Do you still get it somewhere, somehow? Are we allergic to silence now? Afraid of it, almost? The absence of distraction. Erling, you talk with a Norwegian author, a playwright, about this possibility that we're actually afraid of silence or the absence of distraction now.
Yeah, I think that's correct, because in the silence, I think it's, first of all, I think your silence in the silence will be different from mine, and the silence you had yesterday will also be slightly different from the one you have today, because in the silence you meet yourself, and that can be enriching, that can be nice, that can be beautiful, but it can also be a bit brutal and uncomfortable to get to know yourself. So I think that's one of the reasons we avoid the silence, the inner silence, because it can be a bit frustrating.
If we're all so distracted and all not meeting ourselves, I always wonder collectively what that means, what kind of society that creates if everybody is at a distracted distance from that sense of self. I wonder what our listeners say. Jason in Minocqua, Wisconsin. Jason, you're on. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom, and good day to you and your guest.
Thank you.
Just recently, my wife and I moved. We lived in the Green Bay area of Wisconsin, which I know isn't a really big city, but to us it was a fairly busy and big city.
Sure.
And we just moved up to the Northwoods of Wisconsin, and we bought a house on several acres on a dead-end gravel road. So silence is abundant.
Yep.
And just some literal things that I've been noticing. So we're near a lake, and we can't see the lake unless we go up into the upstairs of our house, and with the leaves off, we can see the water. And I was wondering if the lake had frozen over yet. And I'm outside yesterday on my yard building some trails, and I can hear an eagle overhead. And I'm like, oh, the water must still be open because there's an eagle over the lake. And
yeah,
Sure enough, the lake was open. And then even little things like yesterday when I was building trails, I'm hearing the wind coming through the trees, and I think that their car is coming down the road, but it's a dead-end gravel road. So I'm adjusting to the fact that, no, 99 times out of 100, it's going to be wind coming through the trees and not a vehicle coming down the road. So just making these adjustments, and welcome as they may be, but just little things I'm noticing as I'm surrounded by more silence.
Do you talk with your wife about it, Jason, about that presence of the silence and how you may be more acutely hearing the eagle hunting for its lunch? Does it change your sense of well-being or your interaction with her?
Yeah, I mean, we've always been big silent sports enthusiasts, so really big into kayaking and canoeing and that stuff, so we've kind of been in tune with silence for quite a few years to begin with, but now to be living in it, and I mean, you're just, you know, we can barely see our neighbors' houses. I think in humans in general, we're supposed to be more in tune with nature, and, you know, we're smack dab in the middle of it, so we're kind of embracing it and kind of surrounding ourselves with it, and I just think it's good for the soul.
I love that depth of awareness. Thank you, Jason. Erling, I mean, you hear or see an eagle, and then you can put together that, well, of course it's not frozen over yet because that eagle's looking for most likely a fish, and there's that acute awareness of what's actually around us that silence provides.
Yeah, I love that observation by Jason, because, you know, that feeling that you're kind of, you know, embracing something which is greater than yourself is a beautiful feeling. Somehow you need a variation of silence to explore such a situation.
Gregers writes to us, the inner journey is at least as essential as the outer one. The inner journey begins with ignoring the noises outside yourself. Cindy's calling from Boston. Hi, Cindy. Thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks so much. I'm a meditation teacher, and I love what your guest said about meeting oneself. And it really is a concept that I try to teach about developing a relationship with oneself, no matter what you're struggling with, the pains of life, the triumphs of life, developing a relationship of acceptance and welcoming and peace with whatever's happening. And it's so important, because when you can develop a relationship of peace with yourself, it's easier to do that with the rest of the world. Thank you so much.
Well, hang on, Cindy. You're a meditation teacher. We need your wisdom. So you say you like Erling's phrase, meeting, you know, oneself, but we may have listeners thinking, well, wait a minute, I walk around all the time as myself. I'm present as myself. What do you mean meeting myself? I'm right here.
Yeah, right. Well, when you go out like Erling did, or when you sit down to meditate, you're with yourself and your thoughts, your feelings, your perceptions, and a lot of what we do when we go out into the world is to distract ourselves from that. But there's no place to run or hide when you're sitting on the mat or walking, you know, on an expedition for days and days. You are face to face with yourself and all your demons, and it's about really coming to terms with all of those and really just accepting yourself, meeting yourself with peace and kindness.
Is it all demons that we're going to meet in there? Are there some angels too?
No, there's angels too. It's everything. It's what John Kabat-Zinn called the full catastrophe, you know, the whole gamut.
Yes. Oh yeah, I know. I know. Cindy, thank you for your call. Let me get one more and I'll bring it to you, Erling. Thank you, Cindy. Jason is calling. Jason, you're on.
Hi. Funny, on continuing on the theme of meditation, I took the opportunity this year to do a couple of extended meditations, 5 and 8 days, okay, at the Insight Meditation Center in Barre, Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also a member of the Cambridge Insight Meditation Center in Cambridge. But the long retreats were really amazing because we practice meditation in all aspects, sitting, walking, eating meals. And you really get a chance after being immersed in the practice for that length of time that the inner noise in your mind begins to quiet down. And there's a kind of inner silence that I experienced that I haven't under other circumstances, not under, you know, regular intermittent meditation or yoga, but I don't know, it was really great. I recommend it to anyone.
It sounds pretty great, Jason. I appreciate your reporting on it. Erling, what about your thoughts on structured meditation or structured silence, we might say? I mean, you've gone a long way. I think you went to Sri Lanka to be quiet for a while.
Yeah, I once flew from Norway to Sri Lanka to experience silence, going to this silence retreat. It was a fantastic experience, but when I returned back home, I was wondering if it made sense to travel half the world to get some silence.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, Jason is into something. It's a challenge, of course, if you're going to experience inner silence, is that right away, when you go to a quiet place and you sit down or you walk and you're going to shut out the world, then you start to think. And of course, when you think about the past or you think about the future. And that's also kind of a noise. So, but also, as Jason said, which is also my experience, is that if you let a few minutes pass by or maybe more, eventually you will get rid of that noise and you will start to experience the silence. And that's when silence is really enriching.
What did Elon Musk have to tell you about silence and, I don't know, creativity? He comes up with some pretty big ideas.
Yeah, you know, it's interestingly with Elon Musk was that I asked him about silence. He was surprised and he just started to laugh. Ha 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 ha. So that's the only, you know, that's the only quote I have from that conversation.
Pretty zen.
The whole evening. Because, you know, he was surprised, but of course his life has been about silence. You know, when he was a kid in his youth, and also today, as you know, one of the greatest industrialists of our age, it's about silence. But it's also about noise in the sense that he loves to discuss things with people, not only, you know, people on his own level, but, you know, people in general, to kind of listen to their experiences and, you know, listen what they think about different of his ideas. But then he needs some silence to digest all these impressions and also kind of mix them all together and come up with his bright ideas, which eventually, you know, he would like to send people to Mars. And then he needs silence to kind of break through the barriers and, you know, come up with new inventions.
You pay attention to people who pay attention to silence in here. You quote Oliver Sacks, of course, the great neurologist who recently died, focusing on starry nights. And how the hard problem, quoting him here, of understanding how where consciousness comes from, but also just seeing where we are. You quote him, "I saw the entire sky powdered with stars," in Milton's words. "Such a sky, I imagine, could be seen only on high, dry plateaus like that of Atacama in Chile, where some of the world's most powerful telescopes are. It was this celestial splendor that suddenly made me realize how little time, how little life I had left. This is Oliver Sacks writing. My sense of the heavens' beauty of eternity was inseparably mixed for me with a sense of transience and death. But that's awareness, that's knowing. Quoted there in Erling Kaga's book, Silence in the Age of Noise. Patricia in Bloomington, Illinois. Patricia, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for taking my call. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to thank the author for writing this excellent book on this most important topic.
Amen.
Thank you, Patricia.
What I wanted to weigh in on quickly was that my husband and I are both 60, and we raised our kids. And we've gone back to doing what we love to do, which is backpacking. And so we go for weeks at a time into the Rocky Mountains. This summer we were Rockies, Mount Rainier, Olympic National Park, Yosemite. Mm. And we are, I wanted to make this point that we're never happier than when we're walking along on that trail, taking that breath, and I think this ties into the walking meditation that mm-hmm. was mentioned earlier, mm-hmm. or seeing the eagle fly over and noticing which direction it's going in and why, and just that joy that fills you up when you're submerged in nature. Mm-hmm. And when you have just such few belongings, and every belonging matters because everything is taken for a reason. Mm-hmm. And to abandon all electronics and, you know, everything, just you have nothing but yourself and your compass. And then you've got the stars at night, and it is absolutely divine. And there's this boost of, I think, mental well-being that nature really can cure our sadnesses and our losses. And I know you've had losses, Tom, that you've mm-hmm. talked about, and I've certainly had a lot of losses in my life. Mm-hmm. And when we're out there, that kind of all gets put into perspective, mm-hmm. and there's a balance that's restored. So I just wanted to weigh in with those comments as being 60 years old and having kind of this, you know, length of time to look at where our world had maybe had more silence and where we maybe had more time to access nature, and how we're getting farther and farther pulled away from those long times where we might be submerged in it. So they're my comments. I think it's a mental health, happiness is very important to have these times.
Mm. Bless you, Patricia. It sounds like you bring it home with you in a wonderful way. That's really great. Erling, what do you say?
Yeah. I was moved by Patricia's words. Okay. And I think, you know, it's very valuable. But I also think, you know, it's important to keep in mind that you really don't have to go on longer treks. I think, you know, it's and leave electronics back home for a long time. But, you know, it's. I think it's even possible to find this silence at really noisy places, like, you know, with heavy traffic or close to an airport or whatever. But, of course, it's more complicated. And mm-hmm. I also share the experience that, you know, we all have losses. You know, we all have some losses that, you know, will never go away. But of course, in the silence, and I think, and especially combined with kind of walking, I think, you know, it will open doors to wonder and to gratitude and better lives.
Mm. Let's go to Detroit and Fiona. Hi, Fiona, you're on.
Hi, Tom. Hi. I just wanted to go back to the idea of meeting yourself in silence and talk a little bit about why that's important. And for me, as I've been exploring myself through my 20s and my teens, mm-hmm. I find that there's a certain picture of myself that I see when I'm out in society, and I with all the expectations of society and who I am in the company of other people. And when I am in a place of silence through meditation or yoga, I'm sort of connecting with myself to question that. And I'm finding like the dissonance between who I think that I am and who I actually am.
Does it leave you more whole or more true?
Yeah, absolutely. Because even if you think you're at peace with who you feel you are in society, there's a part of you that knows that that's not necessarily true.
Mm-hmm. and you can
or maybe,
find it.
Maybe it's true. Maybe yeah. It could be, you know, several people at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah. Fiona, thanks for your call. Are you now, Erling, are you becoming a spiritual advisor with your expertise in silence to the world?
No.
thanks for Move over, Dalai Lama.
I think that's really, that's a very valid question in the sense that I only wanted to share my own experiences, and I'm not the one to give advice.
Mm. And have you found, by focusing on this, that you managed to hold on or practice more silence, even if it's not quiet?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, it's as was said earlier here by one that, you know, it's to go to search for this inner silence, somehow to find your own South Poles. That's the meaning of life.
From a long walk to the South Pole to the pages of his new book, Erling Kagge is written in Silence in the Age of Noise about the value of that realm, and it's pretty big, pretty deep. Erling, it's been wonderful to talk with you. Thank you very much for spending some time. It's funny for a guy talking about silence on a talk show, but we try and have the spirit of it anyway. We appreciate it. Thank you,
Tom.
Thank you
for inviting.
Yeah, thanks for coming. Silence in the Age of Noise. Listeners, thanks for being with us today and every day. On Point is produced by Brian Amaral, Brian Hardzinski, Eileen Amata, Stefano Katsonis, Sarah Platt, Allison Poley, Tanya Rally, and James Ross. Our executive producer is Karen Schiffman. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.